Hey, what's up, ATI Ecosystem? Thanks so much for coming back again on a Wednesday noon for DOT compliance. This is where we're talking about all things FMCSA, DOT. We have your DOT guy, Brian Riker, answering questions. You're welcome to jump in the live chat. You can post your question if you miss the show live. Hey, what's up, John? If you miss the show live, you can go ahead and post it in the comments below. That's no problem at all. I'll tap Brian on the shoulder. We'll share some email addresses and information and otherwise. Go ahead and do me a favor. Check, check, one, two. You can leave a like. Thank you so much for doing that. You can also share this show. You can click share, click copy. You can grab that YouTube link. It's right below the video. And you can email it, text it, share it on social media. Let folks know. You know somebody that's driving around the scales, doing it wrong. Maybe they didn't rate the trailer right, or maybe they are overweight. Maybe they aren't checking the scales, or it's a CDL question. We get a lot of questions, and this is a safe place to do that. Now we focus on auto transport, but Brian knows a lot about towing and general trucking guidelines. So you're feel free to ask your question, see if you can come up with a stumper. Let's do this. Let's go ahead. Oh, I don't have it plugged in. I can do this. I can plug in my phone live. Because what I want to do is I want to make sure I get a proper drum roll. Oh, shoot. And then this isn't on either. Jay, what are you doing today? Oh, man, the show prep is just way up. This is Auto Transport Intel DOT Compliance. Take two. How's that audio, by the way? It's okay? All right, here we go. Let's just... Oh, there's the... It's time. Thank you so much for joining us today. We have your DOT guy, Brian Riker, with us. Brian, can you see me and hear me okay?
Yes, I can, Jay. As always. Happy to be here. Yeah, you know, my wife said that you have to stop the drum roll because you're inflating my ego.
Oh, I like it.
I told her I'm going to get you a plug-in for your console so that it comes through even more clearly to the audience.
So is it not like I can crank it up? Let's get some serious. There we go. That's the cash register. Let's hear that. That's the letter reveal, and that's pretty loud. Hey. All right, cool. So we have a big day ahead of us today. I love it when we have a special guest. We have a special guest again today, Luke Kibbe with Compliance. It is Compliance. It is Jay. It is Compliance Navigation Specialist. It's better to practice now before he gets here, right? But he's watching. He's taking notes.
Yes.
Compliance Navigation Specialist, because we're going to talk about drugs, right?
Yes, a very serious topic in the towing or the trucking industry.
Yes, it is a serious topic. No, it is. It's really serious. In fact, some would argue far too serious. Right?
Yes,
this is a big deal. What's the background on this? And if you have this is your chance. If you have that burning CBD question, you want to talk about hair testing. You want to talk about fentanyl, opioids, consortiums. This is the show. Bring your drug questions. And if you're not with us live, put it in the live chat below. Yeah.
Yeah. This is an issue. One impaired driver is one too many. And we're not trying to say that the trucking industry has a major problem. In fact, we have some of the best compliance rates with drug testing in all industries that are tested, but there is an issue and there has been a noticeable uptick in positive drug test results. I mean, that is the genesis behind the FMCSA clearinghouse, was to catch habitual abusers that were failing pre-employment drug tests and then going back to the company they're working for without needing a test because they weren't gone long enough or otherwise scamming the system. And that was the whole reason, was to catch stuff like that. So that report you pulled up on the screen right there, the FMCSA clearinghouse report, indicates drug use increased. Well, those are actual true numbers. we can't hold them in context because we don't know how many negative results were returned. The clearinghouse only tracks the positive results. We can't say if the numbers increased because more people went back to work in trucking this year or more people were caught. So we do need to take these numbers for what they actually mean. So you have up there as well that the driver drug violations have increased 10% over 2021. And again, that is a number based on the number of positive tests reported to the clearinghouse. We don't know if the number of tests administered had increased proportionately and if it's still the same percentage of the population of drivers that are returning positive results. And when our special guest Lucas gets in, he will have a lot more information to shed a lot more light on the data behind these numbers.
Yeah, so because that's, I guess that's at the center of the debate, is that what are these numbers? What are they based on? Are they right? Are they, you know, there's a lot of gray area, and we know that. I mean, as far as for the driver, for the owner, for the user, the numbers and perceptions aren't going to match what the reports say.
Right. I would love to see a column added to the data that just shows the total number of tests administered through the program. And then we could really have some meaningful data to determine where we're trending in this industry.
Let's see. Devin says, Virginia passed the marijuana law, but not as non-commercial driver. I still can't engage in this activity even on vacation.
Yes. And that's an excellent point. And that is what probably has led to marijuana being the number one violation that they discover on DOT drug tests. Even though marijuana and its derivatives are legal either recreational or as prescription in a lot of the country, and you can buy over the counter in truck stops CBD products that claim zero THC, that doesn't mean you can use them as a commercial driver. You are still, when you have a CDL, you are still subject to federal regulations, and marijuana and its derivatives are Schedule 1, so they are a prohibited narcotic, and you cannot use them even when you're off, because when you come back and have that random test, it will show up. And although the DOT drug testing regulations do not apply to non-CDL holders, should you be involved in a serious incident and the police department order an intoxication test and they find that you're using this, you still could have a DUI charge just like you would from alcohol or anything else. I'm not going to get into the right or wrong on using marijuana. I remain neutral on that opinion. I believe that one day it will be completely decriminalized, but not until we have a reliable field intoxication test, because the effects are not as easy to predict of marijuana as they are alcohol on the human body, because marijuana metabolizes in our fat cells, and so our body mass index makes a big difference in how long it stays in your body. But that said, I don't want to dig down too deep into the science on this, but yes, even though it is legal recreationally or medicinally in your state, if you are a professional driver, especially a CDL holder that is expected to use your CDL and subject to drug testing, then no, you cannot use it under any circumstance, even with a prescription.
Let's go ahead and do this. It's perfect time. We're going to bring in our special guest, Luke Kibbe, with Compliance Navigation Specialist. Please do help me welcome. Oh, that is a loud drum roll, but a good one, huh? That's a good one. Ladies and gentlemen, Luke Kibbe with Compliance Navigation Specialist. Luke, thanks so much for joining us today. Please say hello. Tell us a little bit more about you, please.
Yeah, glad to be here, Jay. You know, I've been on a couple of times in the past, and I'm with CNS, if that helps, but Compliance Navigation Specialists. We're a family of companies, CNS Insurance, so trucking insurance, occupational health and medicine, CDL driver training, and of course, just anything DOT compliance, licensing, ELDs, and drug and alcohol and consortium management. So me, I've written I mean, I wrote like 150 articles last year, but I write hundreds of articles every year, and join shows and chats with you guys, done webinars on all these different topics on DOT regulations. And glad to chat about this one. There's a lot of interesting data that is either being said or misrepresented, and be good to chat about.
Well, you wrote an article. Let's go ahead and feature that article here. You've got an article here. Here's the company website, cnsprotects.com. So please tell us a little bit more about this article, why you wrote it, and some of your findings.
Yeah, I wrote the article specifically because I saw the New York Post mention this huge clickbait about the data. And when they go, when you read the article, it's not even that bad. But the whole point is this clickbait, like you showed earlier, just all these different, you know, what does the data mean? 10%, is that a big increase? Is that actually an important number? Like Brian was mentioning, you know, what's this data actually based on and around? And so I wanted to address sort of the whole thing, that from past, present to future, what are the numbers looking like? What's the context that's specifically around it? So that's what the heart of the article was. If you see, there's the New York Post article. It says supply chain stalled by 72,000 truckers who failed strict drug tests. Just with the article, yeah, the 72,000 truckers leaving, that's true from the clearinghouse data in 2 years of data. That's the number of truckers that's been, you know, placed out of, you know, can't drive right now. But supply chains aren't stalled because of that. Strict drug test rules, I mean, it's been the same for decades. So, I mean, that's a good thing, I think, right? So when we break down the article, some of the data that they quote is with the American Trucking Association data. And I think what's important to address is the ATA. What do they actually look for? What's their data on this? What's their suggestions on drug testing? And they specifically say, I have it linked here in the article, but it specifically says, yes, there's a driver shortage. We're going to need about 80,000 drivers, I think, by the year 2030, or 160,000 drivers by the year 2030. So there's a driver shortage issue. Why? And it says there is no single cause of the driver shortage problem. And they list eight, I think, or nine different factors. And one of them, you know, would be current drivers or current drivers not passing a drug test. It's just a small piece of that whole data. So the article, I wanted to address the context around that. And I'll pass it on to you guys first, but.
Sure. Well, thank you for being here. And I read your article. I agree with your conclusions in it. Drug testing is not the root of our supply chain disruption and the alleged driver shortage or labor actions in the trucking industry in North America. By far, it's not. It's a minuscule contributing factor, if at all. The shortage of drivers really is a quality of life issue and a churn issue. We generate 4 million new Class A CDLs a year in the United States, and we only have about 3.8 million truck drivers total that require a CDL of the 4 to 6 million, depending upon whose data you use, of professional drivers in the country. So the drug testing is a very small percentage of the issue, but like everything else, I'm not a clickbait guy, and it gets over sensationalized. That said, there is issues here that we can address with our audience and with the truck drivers, A, to make sure you don't become one of those 72,000 that failed and do it accidentally because you believe some product marketing that you can use a product that you buy over the counter in a truck stop. But then again, back in the 70s, they used to sell speed over the counter in a truck stop too. So don't buy everything you can. But the heart of your article is absolutely correct here, that the numbers, we have to take them for what they actually mean. And so you want to continue to break down some of those numbers?
Yeah, and I'll start with the driver shortage problem. The majority, 90% of the driver hiring and shortage problem is this 90% churn rate of drivers bouncing around companies every year.
Yeah.
It's not because there's a shortage of drivers. It's there's who's going to get hired by whom as they bounce around. And why? The driver shortage problem has been around for, a decade on, you know, like the top 10 list, right? Or, I mean, I think like it's always in the top five the last couple of years. And nothing's changed with the driver shortage problem. It's just right now with the, you know, the epidemic that's going on. I mean, the need for more drivers is obviously always going to be there. And
yes, so the pandemic highlighted just how fragile our logistics networks and our supply chain is in this country and in the world. When we have a global economy, a global community, the slightest disruption has major ripple effects. And I've been involved in the transportation industry for 30 years now. I obtained my CDL in 1992. And even in the early 90s, there were talks of driver shortages. And I'm not bashing free enterprise because I am an unashamed capitalist, but we noticed a marked change in the quality of life for truck drivers after deregulation, when we went from a few hundred trucking companies to a few hundred thousand trucking companies, seemingly overnight. And I know I'm oversimplifying, but that made a big change in the job and made it partially less desirable for some people. And then we have people that are management that's just unwilling to reconsider, re-envision what today, because I'm at the age where if I was an actual full-time driver, I'd be considering retirement and aging out of the system. And we have to make it appealing to the next generation that wants to drive a truck, and they don't want to live on the road forever. And so that's the heart of the driver churn and driver turnover, in my opinion, at least. And we really don't want to make it sound like in the songs of the 70s that I grew up with, that we love the truck driver. They also, we glorified pills and caffeine and everything else that was wrong. And we really don't want to continue to perpetuate that image of the professional truck driver, because that doesn't do us any good to attract the right mindset who is going to be a career driver for the next 30 years.
Exactly. And I think some of the articles address like, oh, the other issue is this under 21 or these young drivers. The pilot program that's coming out, is it going to be a lot of drivers joining the road that are young? And
it's capped at 3,000 3,000 participants is what it's capped at. And even there,
I can do anything to the numbers.
No. And to be fair, I'm a supporter of under 21 drivers, but I'm not completely supportive of the Drive Safe Act the way it ended up. Well, it wasn't Drive Safe Act anymore, but the way it had been built into the legislation here. I'm not 100% supportive. I love the apprenticeship concept, but I don't think it would actually do much to allow under 21-year-olds to actually engage in interstate commerce. And where I'm supportive of that is when you live in an area like I do, where I'm 9 miles from New York and 8 miles from New Jersey, and I couldn't cross the state line, but I could drive for 300 miles in my home state of Pennsylvania. We need to readdress this, because 21-year-olds, not all of them have the maturity needed to be a commercial vehicle operator in long haul, but I don't want to lose them from the industry either. But again, going back to the point before deregulation, if you wanted to be in freight, you went to work on the docks and in the yard as a yard jockey and worked your way up out onto the road. And so there is definitely merit to an apprentice program, which if we even borrow from our brothers down under in Australia, that's what they do with their commercial drivers, is you don't just jump out and start driving a tractor trailer and a road train one day, you work your way up to it. So
exactly.
I like that concept.
All right, I got one. clearinghouse or hair testing? Go.
So clearinghouse, let's look at the clearinghouse real quick. So that came out, you know, the data is now like what, a year?
Just over a year old.
Just over a year old. So a year of data now being collected into that. And, you know, it's not looking in the past. That's a present day number. The data, it's there. It's available. But again, it's the, you know, what's the data actually saying? Sure, it went from like, what, 50,000 people the first year saying that there was a positive, that tested positive or refused mm-hmm. to test, some kind of violation. And yeah, it went up, you know, to 55,000 the next year. But that's the number of positives, not the baseline number of how many drivers. There could be a whole lot more new drivers that came in. And that number, if you look at the percent of those numbers, of the number, total number of drivers, it's nothing. It's most likely not that issue. It's not a big change. And this is where I want to talk about drug testing and give you the historical context real quick. In the past, what did the past look like? Is there a drug problem today versus the past? And in 2001, the FMCSA came out with the rule that set the specific guidelines on when they're going to increase the how many CDL drivers are going to randomly drug test. Today is at 50%. There are certain triggers to make it go to 25% of those drivers. It has to be 1% positivity rate. All drivers, CDL drivers being tested, it has to be 1% or less than 1% for 3 years in a row for that rate to go back to 25%. So where was it at historically? From 2001 to 2015, it was at 50%. They were waiting for 3 years of consecutive data saying that it's your people being positive is under 3 years in a row, under 1%. It finally happened in 2016 when it changed, and it only lasted 4 years. And then it went back up to where we've historically always been, and it's going to be there for a while because it needs to be 3 years in a row. And the FMCSA didn't release the exact number for this year, but we assume it's above 1%. Now, okay, those numbers changed. But what were those numbers? Traditionally, we've always been around the 0.9% to 1% number. And it's not, sometimes it was maybe a 0.6 or 0.5 from like 2010, 2011. But the last 5-6 years, it's always around that 0.9 to 1%. Is it going way above 1%? Of course not. And are the numbers going to drop way below 1%? No. And not unless something big changes. So historically, we're at where we've always been at. And the numbers aren't showing any dramatic change on the numbers that actually matter. What caused the, you know, positive rate to increase during that 2016 to 2020 timeframe? We had medical marijuana legalization across states starting to roll out. We had the opioid epidemic. That even caused the FMCSA to add 4 synthetic opioids to the drug screen that you do for your randoms or pre-employment. And so naturally, when you add more drugs, you're going to catch a little bit more people during the epidemic that happened with the opioid crisis. So again, naturally, the numbers were going to increase, but it didn't increase dramatically. And we're not going to see anything change dramatically. And if anything, if marijuana became not a Schedule I drug, then, you know, if and drivers being able to use it, then the positivity rate's going to be dramatically lower, because then you're only counting, you know, meth and cocaine and the hard drugs. So the data is just all sort of, you know, as is for the last several years.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask you about the positivity rate, because like you said, I know it hovers right around that 1% mark. And let's think about it. 1% of all drivers to get tested. We have an active between 3 and 4 million CDL drivers in the United States, but we have about 6 million CDL holders in the United States, with a lot of people washing out in the first 180 days. So we have maybe 5 million people in that pool to pull 1% out of that are positive, I think that's pretty good because it makes the actual effective rate among active CDL drivers somewhere below a half of a percent. And I challenge you to find another industry that has less than one half of 1% of its workforce using drugs. I challenge you to find that.
Yeah, I mean, what is it compared to regular society?
Yeah, society is a little bit different. But when you look at, like, for the DOT, who do they regulate? The five different modes, FAA, the airplane, you got the railroads and the others, the bus. And they're all, you know, at or just right around that number or just a little bit below in those industries. And so in similar regulated industries, trucking's not like dramatically worse than everybody else. It's not this big issue, and it's not causing a long-term issue down the road. It's other situations, other economical change that's happening right now. Now, I will say Jay mentioned like hair testing, talk about that. So let's talk about the future. So the past, everything's the same. The present is just gonna continue right around this number. You're going to see these percentages being touted, you know, 10% increase. Next year, it could be 20% decrease, but it's a small number if you actually look at the numbers. But what will the future look like? And what would that change for drug testing? So if you eventually oral swab testing for DOT, pre-employment, random drug testing, when that gets rolled out beyond like the mega carriers who aren't required to do it, but they're doing that and they're doing hair testing sometimes. They don't have to. And those numbers aren't being applied to the clearinghouse data. So when that starts being rolled out as an option for all companies to use and then using oral swabs and hair testing, it might be able to catch slightly more people. But again, will it be dramatically more for oral swabs? That's like short term. Did you just have something and we'll catch that? So more for pre-employment or post-accident. Random drug testing is not really that important.
Right.
You know, urine is like looking at a week. Oral swab is like 2 hours to like 2 days. And then hair testing, you're looking at a trend of like 30 days to like 3 months out of have they used something in the past? And that's more used for pre-employment, because you're wondering who are these people, and what's the likelihood of you know, having a driver that could get in an accident because of drug use, past history. So again, it's all around context. When and for random drug testing, urine's going to continue to be the main source of drug tests, and we're going to continue to see right around that similar number. And I don't think it'll change too much in the future.
No. And urine's probably still the most cost effective for the random testing. Hair testing is a little more expensive, and hair testing is a lot less accurate when you apply racial bias because of hairs, the hair type the African Americans have, color treated hairs among females. There's a couple of problems still with the validity of hair testing results. I do agree with you that hair testing may have a place in a pre-employment position to see determine their overall lifestyle. We just have to ask, how invasive do we get with pre-screening candidates for this job? But yeah, for post-crash, urine or oral swab is a must because it gives you the immediate results. I mean, we can't use the results of a hair test to determine a operating under the influence citation. You need a breathalyzer or a blood test. Blood is invasive, so we can't really lean on blood tests because we can't forcibly draw blood in every state from somebody. So that leaves us urine, it leaves us oral swabs, which are both acceptable alternatives. Hair testing, we still have to work on a little bit to make it what they want. And I'm going to buck the trend a little bit here because I know that Truckload Carriers Association, they vehemently support hair testing. They want it mandatory, and that's more of a leveling the playing field so that everybody has to test the same. And I understand that. I don't want anyone to slip through the cracks. I don't want a habitual abuser to be on the road with my family and your family, but we also have to be realistic and reliable with the methods that we choose to employ for this. And I think that your analysis does a fair job in catching the here and now, the immediate and immediately past impairments. So I'm a supporter of keeping the system the way it is right now.
I got a question. All right. So marijuana, CBD, methamphetamine, what's the number one on the radar? Did I miss one?
Cocaine is the second beyond marijuana. Meth is the one that, if drivers trying to stay awake and using the different tools, caffeine, other things, you can look at all the, look online and the chats online, and people will say, hey, use meth, you won't get caught, or things like that. But if you do get caught, that drug, again, the percentage is much less than cocaine and marijuana. Marijuana, 50-60% of all drug tests have that were positive had marijuana in it. Cocaine was second, and it was like 15-16% of those positive drug tests contained cocaine. And then beyond that, it's just 5-10% numbers in the drug test. So the hard drugs aren't really being the issue here. You mentioned CBD or in marijuana. So the difference, marijuana, THC is the drug that will get you popped in a drug test. That's the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana and in cannabis. CBD oil or CBD products, whether you use it for pain, whether you use it for medicinal, it's supposed to contain 0.3% THC or less. So very small amount or no THC at all. The problem is those drugs or those products aren't being FDA, looked under a microscope to see if it actually contains it. And the issue that comes out is it's widely available. Yes, technically drivers can use CBD products. That's completely okay. It's not against the rules. The caveat to that and what you have to worry about is there are issues where drivers get popped in a drug test and it's THC. How can that be? I've been using this product. Sometimes people, let's do a swab analysis test and take it to a lab. Guess what? There's THC in it, and there's more in it than it's saying it is. And you're getting popped for what you think you're doing the right thing. You just got to be careful. And
yeah, so,
yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Luke. Exactly. How much do you trust the manufacturer of that product you're buying over the counter, since there is no oversight? How much do you trust them to have a honest lab report on that it's zero, or are they just using their average, and their best average puts it below that 0.3 so they can claim it is zero? And remember, even when you have a prescription, not all prescription medicines, and medical marijuana would be top on this list, still allow you to continue to operate as a commercial CDL driver. So just because a doctor gave you a prescription does not relieve your obligation to comply with DOT regulated drug testing and not have these substances in your system.
Exactly. And that's one of the most important things to what can I do as a driver today? First thing, make sure you're supposed to, but make sure you're up to date when you go in for your medical card, physical exam, mention all the prescriptions you have so you don't get into an issue down the road because it wasn't on record. If they see something that, could be a red flag for as far as a prescription, they're going to talk to your doctor. They're going to verify what it's for, what number that looks like. And then maybe they'll do the medical card instead of a 2-year thing. It's only for a year. They'll come in a year and we'll get it updated and we'll check to see how things are going. It's not a big issue. And then it just saves your butt in the long run. 'Cause what's the worst case scenario? Positive drug test. You're out. But again, that's the other thing that people aren't mentioning in these articles that are all clickbait, is there is a process to get back, the return to duty process. And then, yes, it's, you know, the return to duty process, not that big of a deal. The talking with a substance abuse professional, the SAP, and having 1 to 5 years of, engagement during that process. It's the state of making sure drivers are healthy, are, you know, drug free, and are staying drug free and not falling back into a potential issue. It's a good thing. But what we're seeing in the clearinghouse data is 20% of drivers have finished the return to duty process. All of them could return to duty if they follow that process. So it's not like, again, the driver shortage problem with it. Drivers can come back. It's just going through the process. And that's where articles that we've written before too. One of our most popular articles is, what is a substance abuse professional? What is this process? There's a lot of that discussion around that now, thanks to the clearinghouse bringing it more to light with what the data actually is.
Right, because before, sometimes they would just find a way to move on to another carrier and forget to tell you about that carrier they worked at. And with a manual records check, you don't know to call XYZ Trucking if they don't tell you that they worked there. And yes, a positive drug test is not necessarily a career ender. It may affect your ability to stay employed at that particular motor carrier. And the return to duty process is quite invasive with direct observed drug testing for 12 to 60 months. But it's not the end of the world. You can come back from this. I personally know 2 professional drivers that both had to undergo the return to duty process, one for alcohol and one for a drug-related violation, and they both are still employed. One is a Teamster driver that is still gainfully employed, and it wasn't the end of their career. They're still earning good livings and providing for their family. It was just a low point in their life that they overcame. Even if you are a true substance abuser, that's not a death sentence. You can beat it.
Yep.
Here's a question in the live chat. Is alcohol a zero tolerance for CDL?
Yes and no. You have to, if you're called for, you're not allowed to consume alcohol within 4 hours of coming on duty. And if you're called for a alcohol test, you have to have 0.02 or less and you're fine. 0.02 to 0.4 and you're out of service for 24 hours, but it's not treated as a positive. 0.04 and above is treated just like a positive drug test and you undergo the return to duty process. Did I get that right, Luke?
That's correct. And again, is that historically getting worse? Is that changing at all? Nope. The same standard has been applied for a long time, is continuing to move forward. So you're exactly right.
I got one last thing. So if you're moving forward, say you've gotten this far without a problem, but let's say you're an owner operator and you're not in a consortium. Did I get that right? What do you need to be doing?
You need to call somebody like Luke's company, because that's one service I don't offer yet, is my own consortium. And you need to be in a consortium. Just because you're an owner-operator, you don't have any exceptions from the drug testing requirements. And as a one-truck owner-operator, you have no way to comply with this regulation without the help of a consortium, so you can be in a random pool.
Yes, exactly. As an owner-operator, you're required. It's like for startups, for owner operator startups, sometimes that gets missed, but it shouldn't be, because that's the most common regulation right now that owner operators are having issues with for drug testing is more not being in a consortium, not drivers are testing positive and getting in trouble that way for violations. A consortium, what they do is they handle your drug test. We can, wherever you're at in the country, if you're pulled, 50% of CDL drivers being pulled, you're a part of a pool of other owner operators, basically. If you're one of the 50% that gets, you got to go in for a random, wherever you're at, we can schedule a drug test wherever, nearby on your route. So you're required to be a part of a consortium. Some of the interesting questions that arise for owner operators is, hey, you know, it's when you're being notified, what am I supposed to do? Do I have to go in immediately because I was notified? Or, you know, do I have time to, you know, maybe my wife was notified and she thinks she has to tell me right away. It's the same thing. Once the driver is notified to go in for a random drug test, they need to do so in a relatively quick manner. But, you know, companies like us, we let you know where you have a month to let your driver know, hey, maybe they're coming back into the office, being out for a while. That's when they notify the drivers when they come back in, and that's when they can schedule a drug test in a local area. So just be aware of that. Once you are notified, once you see, or as an owner operator specifically, that you got to go in, you're going to have to go in.
If you answer the phone call from Luke's company, you're going to drop what you're doing and you're going to go take the test because you've been notified. And owner operators, this is critical. This is one of the violations that is basically zero tolerance by FMCSA that will result in your operating authority being revoked if you're operating CDL vehicles without a compliant drug testing program and proof that your CDL drivers have undergone a pre-employment test before they operate your CDL required vehicle and are enrolled in a random testing program. And this has come to light with the clearinghouse lately because CVSA now is starting to check clearinghouse records to see if the driver's been queried in the last year. And if they haven't, it doesn't affect you at the side of the road, but they're referring that to their state partners for potential compliance reviews to check for that motor carrier's drug and alcohol regulation compliance. So the days of floating under the radar and nobody's going to know are gone. We have the mandatory new entrant safety audit now that happens. And they're doing them offsite, so they're doing more of them than ever in a quicker, more expeditious manner. And we've moved away from on-site compliance reviews in general, so they probably will get to more than the 10% of motor carriers for random reviews without cause at some point. So you're much more likely to get caught without a drug testing program. And that is your authority is revoked, and then you're out of business.
Out of business. If you get back in, insurance is not going to like that. I mean, it's a fallout that happens. That's a simple issue. Just, you know, follow the rules, right? So if you need to, I always recommend, I write tons of articles on all the rules and regulations on the DOT and FMCSA. So feel free, go check out the website or websites that we have and check out the articles. The whole point for us is to educate the drivers and companies on what they need to do. So,
yeah, let's go to cnsprotects.com. I also shared a couple other links in the live chat. And just one last question here before I let you guys go. So what is the tolerance level for THC?
So THC, again, if it's in your system during a drug test, it's a positive drug test. So how do they measure that? I mean, THC during a urine sample, which is checking like a 2-day to a 7-day window, is it in there? That's the psychoactive element. What we don't have yet is there proof that you were actually high at the time that you were driving? We don't have that proof. We don't have a roadside breathalyzer test like alcohol that says, yep, you're positive with THC. The technology is trying to be built. California has a couple, I think the university's working on it, a breathalyzer system, but then they're gonna have to create rules on, okay, what is this level that we can say, yep, you're high. But again, body types are all different. So it's a very complex issue being worked out. Until we have that, just stay away. And, you know, I follow the, you know, whether it's Facebook groups or Reddit groups and other trucking groups out there, people saying, hey, I smoked marijuana for 10 years and I want to become a truck driver. I don't think I can stop. What should I do? You know, there's people out there, and this discussion's happening online, and we just want to make sure that you get the correct answers. and know what the rules and regulations are, and then know what is the consequence of that. And so, yeah, just don't do it. You're a professional driver, and safety is the most important thing on the road, and you're regulated that way. So stay safe.
And I agree. I think what we see a lot is on the CBD. If you can not use the CBD, you're probably better off.
Yeah, because you're gambling. You don't know that product's quality control is going to keep it at a true zero. So ask yourself, can you deal with the pain? Or is it worth risking needing to complete the return to duty process, which direct observation is very invasive, not to mention costly and time consuming for the SAP. And you have to follow what they prescribe for your treatment. So if they tell you you're doing meetings, you're doing this program, you're doing that, you have to. And they're making a move to invalidate your CDL until you complete the return to duty process. It won't be you can just go work under the radar for a company that doesn't care about drug testing, because once the clearinghouse regulations are fully implemented and the state driver's license agency partners are on board with this, you will end up with a downgraded license. So this is becoming very serious. And we're not saying that the trucking industry has a huge drug problem, but among the 1% that do partake, this is a very serious issue. And if we're going to move towards goal zero of no preventable crashes, then this is the approach that U.S. Department of Transportation is going to take on impaired driving.
Exactly. I agree 100%.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. We're looking at the quarter hour, so we're over our time, but this has been really informative, and I can always tell by there's really a dropout in live chatting because the listening, I think it was really engaging. There's some really great material here, so thanks so much for taking the time to share it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you, Luke, for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And if you all, I'll end the meeting there. If you all have any questions after the show, please put it in the YouTube comments below. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Luke. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Stay safe. And we'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. See you later. All right. Hey, thanks, everybody, again, for tuning in today. Really do appreciate it. And if you do have any questions, do let us know. And if you know of a great topic that you would love to see on the next show, I don't think we have anything scheduled next week. This literally, I think Luke emailed me sometime last week, and we put the show together. So we put them together fast because it's the relevant issues of today that we want to talk about as soon as we can. So if you've got something, please let me know. If you see something, I know the vax, the border, the bridge, Canada, DC, etc. It is very important. And I follow the news as you do too, but I didn't see an opportunity for a pivotal issue. And I know, I'll tell you what, I do still have, I'll go ahead and share this. Let's do industry news style. The bathrooms, I think that this is a big issue. I think we should definitely be seeing the right kind of, House committee stuff. Yeah, here we go. The House Committee advances truck parking rest area access bills. That's good. We'll keep seeing that. We'll be following that. And so we'll talk more about that next time with Brian. So thank you guys so much. Let us know what you see in the news that you want to talk about on DOT compliance with your DOT guy, Brian Riker, every Wednesday at noon Central Time. If you have a dispatching question, you want to talk about dispatching, the illegal stuff, carriers, brokers, dispatchers, and all the craziness, the load boards and the mobile apps, cheap freight, we saw that in the live chat again. And Silverman, here's the thing. That is part of the problem. I think what happens is, it's just like when you get a driver's license. The burden is on, not on them. They don't have the burden of proof. You've waived that right, I believe, when you get a commercial or regular driver's license. You've handed over the burden of proof, and now the burden is on you to remain at 0%. Because that's the thing. If you're using CBD and THC pops up, hey, I didn't use marijuana is what you say. Well, the THC was in your system. I know. It's a problem. And I don't know if you can hire an attorney on that. I don't know what you do. But if you have continued questions on this, you can send an email to your DOT guy. That's Brian Riker. You can email him, and he'll help find information and follow up. The email is onair@yourdotguy.com. You'll see it in the live chat pop up. There it is. See, yeah, well, that, see, and I'll tell you right then and there, that's why Luke was talking about immediate systems roadside. Because if you smoke right now, jump in a truck in an hour, well, then they're going to say, well, we can smell it, you know, and all that stuff. And then they're going to probably remand you for a drug test as soon as possible, etc. But again, I don't know, so go ahead and email. I'm speculating live. Email Brian, let him know your question. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Please do join us tomorrow on Dispatching Live and on Friday on Cars on the Move. And then we have another big show Tuesday night here on Auto Transport Intel, ATI, the Car Shipping Business Channel. Everybody take care, and we'll see you soon.